This is In the Hive, a show that looks at the issues and ideas that tie the Greater Salt Lake Valley together. I'm Emily Means, and today on the show, we're looking at something that happens every 10 years in Utah and across the country, redistricting. That's the process of reevaluating and redrawing political boundaries following the U.S. Census, something that's currently controlled by the state legislature. Around the country, state lawmaking bodies get flack for how they carry out redistricting and allegations of gerrymandering, where boundaries are redrawn in a way that benefits a particular political party, have been common for decades. According to Jason Perry, director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics at the University of Utah, that expressly political aspect of redistricting is just one side of the coin. He says that another part of the process has to do with redrawing the overall U.S. congressional map. That's where migration and population growth changes where seats in Congress are located. For example, Utah picked up an extra House seat after the 2010 census.
Once you hit a certain population growth rate, you have the possibility of getting additional members of Congress, which can be very helpful for a state. If you have more members in the House than less, sometimes you have the opportunity to have more of a say and people have more power in those positions.
But the main focus of the critiques of redistricting in its current form are about that other part of the process, where elected officials decide the geographic and the political makeup of a district for the next few election cycles. It's a process, Perry says, is meant to be fair.
There's an overriding requirement that the lines are not drawn in a way that gives priority to any one party. They are intended to be. You're right, there's controversy always. When you start drawing lines, there are some people are always going to say that it's not fair in some way. But the intention of the legislature is supposed to be a fair and neutral drawing of the lines that does not favor one particular party.
Following the last round of redistricting in Utah in 2011, that fairness was called into question by state Democrats, who said their already limited power in the majority Republican state was being further diminished. And some analysis by the Associated Press lends credence to those complaints. A recent AP report said GOP candidates in Utah won an average of 64% of the votes in each district in last year's election, but they won 83% of all the seats. As a result, according to the Associated Press, that redistricting helped Utah Republicans pick up three more seats than expected based on a typical ratio of votes to seats. One explanation for that outcome has to do with what members of the Legislative Redistricting Committee were focused on back in 2011. Again, here's Jason Perry.
And so our legislature went back and forth on this issue as to whether or not you needed to have clear rural representation, clear urban representation, or you do like something like a pizza, where you got a little piece of all of it. Because everyone is worried, was worried during this last redistricting process that rural Utah is properly represented. So if you look, kind of just look at the makeup of the state, the rural Utah might not have much of a say if they're just left with that particular demographic. And so our legislator said we want a mix of this because every person that goes to Congress should have in every vote some thought about rural Utah, some thought about urban Utah. That was the argument that won the day.
Representative Gage Froer, a Republican from Huntsville, was on that 2011 Legislative Redistricting Committee. I recently spoke with him to learn about the mechanics of redrawing the boundaries, how the legislature decided to patch together urban and rural areas into the same congressional districts, and what kind of input voters currently have in the redistricting process. Representative Gage Froer from Huntsville, thank you so much for joining us. You were on the Legislative Redistricting Committee in 2011 after the 2010 census. So I'm wondering if you can kind of describe what that process was like and how you were selected.
Yeah, I was obviously appointed by the current speaker back then, who happened to be Rebecca Lockhart, asked me to serve. And she appointed the committee. I think she did a great job of making sure that the various areas, not necessarily counties, but in general areas of the state, were represented by either a senator or a representative that was on that, you know, to serve on that committee. And so it was a fairly intensive committee work, entailed, I think, about 8 or 9 meetings that we met with members of the public across the state. We traveled to Washington County. We traveled up to the basin, obviously Salt Lake. We did one in Weber County and Cache. So I feel that we did a good job of having public input and allowing the public and those that were concerned with redistricting to have a voice. Most of those meetings were fairly well attended. Areas in central Utah were probably better attended than other areas, but we probably averaged 100 to 125 people per meeting.
What was that public input like? I mean, what kind of hand did Utah's residents actually have in the redistricting process?
Well, they have a great hand, just like they do with legislation, because they can explain their current situation and why they feel that boundaries are either fair or not fair. Obviously, the biggest concern that we heard was when we went into counties where a city might be split or a county might be split. You know, and obviously we have to work within the numbers that are given to us, which, you know, obviously are set by that's the reason they do it after the census, because you have a certain number of voters, basically individuals that go to every House district, and you have a certain number that go to every Senate district, and you have to match those up as close to that number as possible. We were told by our ledge council that unless we kept that, you know, somewhere under 100 people in the variance, that there was a good chance that, you know, that we could be sued. There would be a lawsuit to say that didn't meet the definition of the law. You know, it's great to say, hey, you can't split. You don't want to split cities or split neighborhoods or split counties. But at the end of the day, you have to abide by the federal statute, which says, you know, one person, one vote, which means you need to get as close to that 38,000 or 39,000 for House, and I believe it's 90,000 or somewhere close to that for Senate.
So you were really trying to meet those numbers. Let's talk about that 2011 redistricting process. That's when the Utah legislature decided to group urban and rural interests into the same congressional districts. What was that debate like, especially among the public? You know, you said you spoke with some people from Washington County, some people from more populated areas. What were their concerns, and how did the legislature come to that conclusion?
Well, you know, as we went through that process, and again, everybody on the committee had the ability to sit down and draw their own maps. So, I mean, I don't know the number of maps that were drawn, but, you know, it was probably over 1,000 maps that were drawn for the overall process. And there was a strong debate on combining, basically, for the congressional districts, is, you know, what do we do to bring in more urban with the rural to make it a better blend, or do we keep it all, you know, all urban? And the debate was really, and from the public, not all the public, but a majority of the public felt that a diversified district was better than just, you know, basically singling out one particular geographic region, which can lead to then really almost assured win by one party or the other.
6 years later, it's 2017. Do you feel the views of both populations have been well represented in Congress? Have you heard from any of your constituents?
I haven't heard. I haven't heard that they felt that they weren't represented. I mean, obviously, there's those that felt that Salt Lake should maintain the urban base, and which would slant it more toward the, you know, the Democratic possible win. But, you know, as far as the public that I've talked to, they felt that it was the redistricting for the congressional districts was fair, and it appears to be, you know, working the way it was drawn, at least at this point in time.
All right, well, let's talk about the Better Boundaries Initiative, which is a public initiative attempting to remedy what some people view as gerrymandered congressional and legislative districts in Utah. And they would do this by creating an independent redistricting commission. What do you think of the initiative?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I haven't read the initiative, you know, page by page. My initial feeling, and I think would probably still hold after I read it, was that I don't think that an independent commission is in the position to do anything that would enhance the ability of the public to be better heard or represented. And they're under the same, you know, they'd be under the same, I guess, glass that we would. that they're going to have people that will be lobbying them for certain districts. And, you know, is an independent commission really going to be independent? You know, you're in order to have the proper public feedback and input, you know, it requires negotiations. It requires somebody that's going to say, you know, look, this person's right, or this is what we need to do. You know, I'm not sure an independent commission really has any ability more than the elected legislators to do that. In fact, I think they have less, because if an elected legislator serving on that redistricting oversteps their boundaries, they can be voted out. An independent commission person really has nothing to lose by doing exactly what they're afraid is going to happen, which is gerrymandering.
Looking at other states with independent redistricting commissions, looking at Arizona, for example, they have two Democrats, two Republicans, and one unaffiliated representative on this redistricting commission. Do you think if we had something like that, I don't know, maybe it would allow for greater balance in determining redistricting boundaries?
Well, keep in mind, we had both Republicans and Democrats on the redistricting in 2011, so it wasn't like one party had the total control. You know, now when the final vote came down on the maps, on the final boundaries, obviously we know that the Republicans have a majority, so they have the ability to finalize the map. But it's not like the Democrats didn't have any input, because they had great input. I think, you know, Ben McAdams was on that commission with us. I can't remember if Jackie Biskupski was on there or not.
She was.
I think she was. The Democrats had a strong contingent of their party. So, and I don't think they would say that they, you know, felt that they were taken advantage of. I guess that's a question you better ask them. But, you know, as far as having a mix of, you know, some independent people on that committee, I don't think that's necessarily bad. Again, it's still going to be the decision of the legislature, unless that changes, which I don't think it will, that the legislature, you know, has the right to approve the final map and the final boundaries. So, you know, if it's going to come from an entirely independent commission, and, you know, they don't come up with maps that the legislative body feels comfortable with, where do we go back for negotiations? How do we, you know, how do we bring it to a head? We know we can do that with the legislative process. I'm a little concerned whether that could be handled with an independent. You know, would the legislature have right to veto? You know, what would be the mechanics? What I'm saying is, I think we go through that process anyway. Now, are we tossing in an additional element that, you know, could cause additional delays or unforeseen circumstances? You know, bottom line, I don't know if our current system is broken. My opinion is it's probably not. You know, does the public have the right to weigh in on the decisions? Absolutely. And, you know, they can bring their influence one way or the other on the drawings of the maps, especially in their local areas.
Speaking of the public weighing in on some of these issues, let's talk more about ballot initiatives. There are quite a few in the works right now. There's the Our Schools Now initiative, right? And one for medical marijuana, as well as this one, Better Boundaries. What do you think that means for Utah voters? Are they trying to say something to their elected representatives?
Well, I don't think there's any question they're doing that with medical marijuana. They felt that they weren't listened to in the legislature, and saying, okay, you know, we think there's a majority out there that support this. So I fully support their ability to go do that. You know, at the end of the day, it still comes down to a popular vote and whether that'll pass or not. But, you know, I fully support their ability to do that. You know, if you've got people that are willing to put in the time and effort and money to make that happen, then obviously they deserve to be heard. Are they sending a message? Probably so.
What do you think of that message as an elected representative?
Well, I the people in my district shouldn't say fully supported, but, you know, 70% the passage of medical marijuana a year or two ago when we started running some bills. In other areas, senators and representatives didn't think that their citizens were at that level. So That's how things get passed. You still have to have enough House votes and enough Senate votes to get something passed, along with the governor's signature.
That's the legislative process, I guess.
That's the process, yeah.
Right.
So, again, if they go into these counties that legislators were in that are opposed to that, and they get the signatures on the ballot, and it passes on the ballot, then they've had the ability to be heard, which, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we should all do.
Should voters be more involved in the redistricting process? What kind of changes, if any, should be made to this process?
Well, I think voters should definitely be involved with redistricting, because they can have a say and not necessarily who their legislator is, but, you know, they may have a particular geographic area that they have in common with their neighbors. And I don't think it's fair, you know, in cases to split districts, you know, within neighborhoods or across street, even though that becomes necessary, depending on the variance that the feds allow us to have with one person, one vote. So I guess, you know, the end of the day, yeah, should they become involved? Absolutely. How do they get involved? They attend the meetings. They call the people on the redistricting committee, or they call their representative or senator and say, you know, get a hold of the people that are the legislators that are on that committee and have their voice heard.
Again, that was Gage Froer, a Republican representative from Huntsville, who served on the legislative committee responsible for the last round of redistricting in Utah. As you just heard, Froer encourages people to get involved in the legislative redistricting process. But one Utah group is trying to increase voter involvement in that process by moving it out of the legislative realm altogether. The Better Boundaries Initiative, a bipartisan campaign co-chaired by former Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, a Democrat, and Jeff Wright, a Republican, seeks to minimize the perceived impacts of political interests by establishing an independent redistricting commission. They'll need to gather enough signatures, 113,143, from at least 26 of the state's 29 Senate districts, as determined by the Lieutenant Governor's Office of Elections, to land on the ballot in 2018. Someone who has been working to change the way redistricting is done in the state is Utah Democratic Representative Rebecca Chavez-Hauck. During the 2017 legislative session, and the session before, Chavez-Hauck ran bills to overhaul the redistricting process in ways that mirror what the Better Boundaries Initiative seeks to do. Recently, I sat down with her to hear her thoughts on the way redistricting is done now, how it might be improved, and to get her perspective on the ballot initiative that would take the process out of the hands of lawmakers altogether.
For a number of years, I've been trying to put forth the idea that maybe it's a better idea to allow for an independent redistricting commission to assist the legislature in defining the districts for the legislature, the school board, and congressional districts. Now, notably, we as the legislature have the constitutional authority to do this. But what I have seen in states that have incorporated independent commissions is that the public feels a bit more peace of mind, knowing that there was a broader, more transparent, less vested conflict of interest type of process when a state or a community utilizes an independent commission of some form or fashion. So really felt that this is something we needed to incorporate. Since we redistricted last in 2011, I've noticed it becoming more and more difficult to have discussions that are in the middle of the road, to have discussions in the political center. And we are seeing our community and our country become more and more divisive politically and ideologically. And it's my contention and my argument that non-competitive districts play into that. When representatives, when elected officials feel that there isn't accountability at the ballot box, or there may not be accountability at the ballot box, you start to become tone deaf to what the broader population, the broader moderate middle in your community believes, and I don't think you're an effective representative.
So when they feel like they've got a safe spot in the legislature.
Right. And or Congress. And I think what I would argue that what we're seeing in Congress, notably with the divisiveness that we've seen in the past couple of decades, is precipitated in part to very, very, very safe seats, non-competitiveness in the electoral field. And I don't think that the public and the voters are well taken care of when that happens.
Since you're a legislator, I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about like the intricacies of the current system and how an advisory redistricting commission like the one you proposed in your bill would compare.
Well, what I'll do is I'll talk a little bit about the experiment that Salt Lake County did, because in the last redistricting process, they actually established an independent redistricting commission. And it had, one independent, one Democrat, and one Republican. I'm trying to remember. I keep thinking there were other commissioners there. But what I liked about it is they really tried to make an effort to diversify the people that are making those decisions in terms of drawing the lines. They took the time to listen to the people. They, had many public meetings and had the discussions about how they were going to apportion the council districts with the public in mind and with the public present. And people that were initially cautious about moving in this direction of having an independent commission do it for Salt Lake County, when they reflect upon it across the political spectrum, both the Republicans and the Democrats that served on the council, as well as those that served on the commission, felt that they were well served and the public was well served by having an independent commission isolated from having that vested interest in your own districts being drawn in front of you, felt that the districts that were drawn were fair. They met the criteria that were established by the commission. There was a little tweaking here and there with a couple of the districts, but for the most part, it's my understanding that the districts that the independent commission drew for Salt Lake County Council were adopted by the council. There's oftentimes a lot of argument against independent commissions as to whether or not people can ever truly be independent. And I would say there is a question of that, but I will say people are challenged by the fact that individuals are drawing districts that they're running for specifically, and where you may have an ideological bent or a community interest in drawing districts one way or another. If you're an independent commissioner, you're still not drawing districts that you specifically are going to be running for. And so I think that that continues to give people pause. There's just something that doesn't sit right with the public when they understand that legislators are the ones that are drawing their own districts, and then notably the districts of the congressional representatives who go to Washington, D.C.
Who would sit on your independent redistricting commission? What does your ideal commission look like?
Well, the bill that I ran was a tad bit different than the prospect that is being presented, or the proposal that's being presented by the Better Boundaries Initiative. And it's just by nature of trying to find something that was a bit more middle of the road for that would be accepted by individuals from across the political spectrum as we enter, this initiative process. I did have a component in the makeup of my commission in the bill, HB 411, and previous iterations of the bill that allowed for retired judges to be appointed to the commission. I felt that that might give some people some peace of mind, maybe allay some of these arguments about can people really truly be independent. Judges have to be as independent and objective as they possibly can be when they're sitting on the bench, and by nature have kind of looked at processes in that form. So the bill that I proposed actually would have required 3 retired judges to serve on the commission. But other than that, there are a lot of parallels and similarities between the current initiative proposal and the bill that I've run the last few years, where you have, the 2 commissioners that are appointed by minority party leaders of both the House and the Senate, and commissioners appointed by the majority leaders of the House and the Senate, so equal numbers there. And then 2 unaffiliated commissioners. My bill also proposed 2 unaffiliated commissioners in addition to the retired judges. The commission that I proposed in 411 was a bit larger than what's proposed in the Better Boundaries Initiative. But the makeup, where you've got some independent, some unaffiliated voters, as well as those that are appointed by individuals in the legislature, since the legislature would eventually be the ones adopting those plans, I felt is replicate and it makes sense. The unaffiliated piece is just so important to me because a lot of people don't realize that the majority of voters in the state are unaffiliated. And the process that we have now presently with elected officials that represent a party one way or the other, that is one thing that continued to give me concern as over the many years that I've fought for redistricting reform is that you've got this very large cohort of unaffiliated voters that really don't have people representing them in many cases. They may have inclination ideologically one way or the other, but really as unaffiliated voters, I've always felt that they have really not had a strong voice in who represents them. And I think in part having them participate and have equal voice in a commission like this will make a big difference. And then what's being proposed in the initiative proposal is also that the commission chair would be appointed by the governor, again, so to provide input from both branches and basically so that everyone kind of has skin in the game to see success in the commission working effectively.
This initiative has bipartisan support. You're a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat.
Why do you think your colleagues in the legislature had a hard time with this bill that you proposed?
Well, I think part of it is it's an ideological difference in the way that some of us view the republic that we exist in, the representative democracy that we exist in. Many of my colleagues feel very, very strongly about the fact that the action occurs in terms of a voter saying, this is who I want representing me at the ballot box. And from that point forward, they're delegating their authority to how their government is being run to that elected official. And I see it more as a partnership. And I think that, you know, probably I would say more of the folks on my side of the aisle would look at it that way. Yes, we are elected to represent those individuals, but we have to be continually accountable to those voters and the residents that we represent. And so I think that initiatives are one mechanism by which the voters can put us in check, as well as re-election, obviously. But if the districts are continually being built and drawn so that they're less and less competitive, it makes it harder and harder for the minority voice, or even some cases a majority voice, to be heard in a district when the lines are drawn in a certain way to keep that seat safe for any given political party. So, you know, that's a way I think that we've continued. That's kind of the tension that continually occurs as we have this discussion on redistricting, whether it just really should be isolated in the hands of the legislature or whether there should be some more ardent input via a commission that works in partnership with the legislature to define redistricting lines.
Do you truly think voters are interested in this issue, or do they just, you know, put a check next to whoever is on the ballot?
I think some do, but I find, and I think recently I find that voters are having more open dialogue with our legislators. They're really starting to call us to account. I mean, I've always received emails and phone calls from my constituents, but I think people are starting to be a bit more vigilant about decisions that are made by the people that represent them. And, you know, notably, there's always going to be straight party voters. There's always going to be people who feel very strongly that their party represents them and they'll just automatically vote for that party. But when you see so many unaffiliated voters in a constituency, it says something for the fact that the parties need to be more responsive, number one. And number two, we need to find a mechanism for those unaffiliated voters to really feel that they have a voice. Notably, redistricting is a very complicated and nuanced subject. You know, I know that. But I go back to just the underlying notion that I think voters have grave concerns, or it just doesn't sit right with them when they think about the fact that the people that they elect are drawing their own districts. And when you explain that to them and you say, you know, we believe that voters should elect their representatives, not the representatives define who their voters are going to be, that is simple enough for people to understand. And when we say we're trying to find a mechanism where you will have a better voice, a more independent voice by having individuals that do not have a vested interest, that they're running for the districts that they're drawing, by dovetailing an independent commission into this process, I think that's why you see the polling come out the way it does. I mean, even when you don't get into the nuance or the specifics of what is entailed with redistricting, when you just say, you know, it's transparency, it's accountability, it's independence, it's another mechanism for you to have a voice, that rings true for folks. And I think that that's why you see more than 60% of individuals in this state across the political spectrum supporting this initiative and this idea.
Representative Rebecca Chavez-Houck, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Do you prefer leaving the redrawing of congressional and legislative boundaries in the hands of the legislature? Or would you rather see that process carried out by an independent commission? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, and thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of this program on our website, kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.